Welcome to Better Returns, where you will learn how to escape the volatility of the stock market by passively investing in real estate like a pro. 90% of millionaires earned and maintained their wealth by investing in real estate. We will share real-life examples from savvy investors so you can do the same. This show is for educational purposes only and should not be considered legal, tax, or investment advice. He used to wear olive green parachute pants in the 80s. Your host and my dad, Matt Hansen.
Welcome back to Better Returns, Invest Like a Pro. I've got another one of my friends on the show today, Jin Wang. Jin is a former auditor and CPA. Don't hold that against her. She is a fun person, really. She's been investing in real estate since 2014. She left her W-2 job in 2020 to become a full-time real estate investor. And she's the co-founder of Sage Investing Group with two of her friends, which are friends of mine as well. They're a really great team. As a managing partner and head of investor relations at Sage, Jin is driven by her unwavering commitment to help other first-generation individuals grow and protect their wealth for future generations. With over 2,600 units across seven markets today, Jin and her team exemplify the transformative power of strategic, powerful investments. Welcome to the show, Jin.
Hi, Matt. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes. Well, I always like to start with your origin story. How did you discover the value of real estate?
Sure. So actually, it took me a long time to understand the power of real estate investing. It started about 10 years ago, when I started getting curious on why I kept hearing people say that real estate is the most powerful investment vehicles out there. And I wanted a piece of that for myself. I was like, well, how can I learn about it and how can I apply that to our own lives? Mm-hmm. So back then I used to, I did a little bit of research and I guess initially I kind of understood that real estate investing, the only returns that you would get is really, I only saw the cash flow from it.
Right.
And to me, it didn't really make a lot of sense. Because in our area, I live in Maryland, and where I am from, the home values are quite high. So it doesn't really quite cash flow. Anything I buy might cash flow $50, $100 a month at most.
Yeah.
So it didn't really quite make sense to me, but I was still kind of like wondering, well, why is it still the most powerful vehicle if the cash flow is not really quite great? So I did a lot of education through podcasts and reading books and eventually started going to conferences. And I eventually realized that, there are a lot more to it than just cash flow, right?
Right.
Through real estate, you get the returns from the appreciation of the asset. You also get tax benefits like the paper losses from the depreciation of the asset. So when you take all of those into consideration, the return can be quite significant. So then once I realized that, I came across this one book, which was really great. I would recommend you read it if you haven't already, but it's Tom Wheelwright's book, Tax-Free Wealth. And I read this back in 2017. And at that point in my life, my husband, Jack, and I, we had a growing family. We just had our second baby, paying a lot of expenses for childcare and all the other typical expenses that, typical middle-class family would pay for. And so we're working really hard to pay, to make a good living for our family. But at the end of the day, we felt like, we didn't really have a lot of time to spend with our kids. And plus we ended up having to, I think at that time, our tax liabilities were close to six figures.
Wow.
And so, at the end of the year, we're like, okay, we don't have a lot of time to spend with our kids. And plus, we don't have a lot of money left over to save with. So how are we going to build a future for ourselves going like this? So from the tax-free book, one great thing I picked out there was one of Tom's, one of his most famous quotes is, if you want to change your tax, you got to change your facts.
Yes.
And so then I kind of looked at our situation and I was like, well, what is it about ourselves that we have control over? What can I change? And then two things came to mind, one of which was, how we set up our business. Jackie's a residential realtor in the Maryland, Virginia area. And so he's a realtor. We had a single member LLC set up for him. And so I knew that if we changed that to an S-Corp, it would save us about 15% in self-employment tax. So that was one first thing that I did. And then the second thing I did was like, all right, well, we got to start investing in real estate then. There's a lot more returns of real estate than I initially thought. And as a realtor, you get a lot of, benefits, tax benefits from investing in real estate. So those are the two facts that, I prioritized to change about our lives at that point in time.
Excellent.
So that was the first discovery. And then, so from there, we, got really resourceful and, we looked at what areas we had lazy money sitting on, such as home line of equity or, whatever. And so we became really resourceful, found some lazy money that we had, pull out some of that to use to buy two duplexes at that time.
Excellent.
And so, through those two duplexes, it gave us really great experience and exposure to landlording. We got a lot more than, our prior properties did. We couldn't really afford to buy a lot, so the properties we bought were a bit older, so they were a lot, more maintenance that we had to that we had to take care of. And it was really hard to find quality property managers in the area that we invested in. The ones that we did find, they placed poor quality tenants in our property, and that resulted in what, like, loss of delinquencies and also damages to our property that, the rent deposit was just not able to cover. So, we learned a lot through that whole experience, but in hindsight, I do feel like it's a big blessing in disguise because it led us to our second discovery of the power of real estate investing. So through that experience, we're like, all right, well, maybe landlording is not really what we want, especially since we have two young kids and we both have full-time jobs. What else is out there? And so that's when we stumbled across passively investing in multifamily. And that was the second great discovery because now we're like putting our money into these investments, and I don't have to deal with any of these problems that I mentioned above with, tenants and having to manage your property manager, even though you're paying them. And plus, you get all these benefits that we got in our duplexes and our single families passed off to us. So that was the second major discovery.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. So yeah, I've met Tom Realwright, back to that book, Tax Free Wealth. I met him, oh, probably 4 or 5 years ago at a seminar. So I've got his book and I read it. Same thing. It was like, oh my gosh, how you structure things is so important from a tax standpoint. And
Oh,
you
yeah.
mentioned Jack is classified as a real estate professional status according to the IRS, which gives you all these rights and privileges. And I am as well, because after I retired from my corporate gig, I could become, there's requirements, 750 hours per year that you need to be focused on real estate specifically and all that. That's really powerful in terms of tax, because you can offset passive losses with W-2 income. So
Yes.
that's really a powerful thing that you guys have done there. And then the third thing is you came to the realization, do I want to be an active investor in dealing with tenants, toilets, and termites, or do I want to be a passive investor or run deals in your case? But I know you do both. And I'm a partner in large apartment complexes. Totally different world.
Yeah,
I would beg to say, yeah, the passive is much more rewarding and
yes.
financially and personally than the active one, because you've lived through the active stuff and it's not enjoyable, is it?
Yeah, right. It's not enjoyable, but at first, even though I kind of knew that passive investing existed, I didn't really understand what it was all about, to be honest with you. And so, I wanted to have control over my assets. I wanted those problems. But little did I know that those were, major problems that would suck up so much time. But I wanted control, over, I guess just have easier access to the property, like something that's in state closer to where I live, and just have more control. But I learned with more control, obviously, more time, more involvement, more problems. And I discovered that was not something that I wanted.
Yes, that's really good. Let's talk a little bit about what the Sage team does. So I know Lana and I know Maggie. I know your business partners really as well as I know you and Jack quite well. We've known for probably 2 or 3 years now. And I think you really do have a great team there. So let's talk about how you structured this Sage team and how you help people with your company.
Yeah, sure. So, Maggie, Lana, and you read earlier that I have a CPA background, audit background, and it's really funny because all three of us, all three partners on this team, come from that CPA audit background. So that was a commonality that really kind of brought us together. And then as well as our value, our work ethics, mm-hmm. You know, it's very hardworking individuals that just want to do things the correct way instead of taking shortcuts. And that was something I truly value in, you know, having partners. And so, yeah, the three of us, we found each other through a mastermind group, you know, that you're part of as well. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, from there, we it was really funny because I started off being an active investor in multifamily by raising capital, right, for other mm-hmm. people's deals. I was, part of that. And then Lana and Maggie, they came in with a desire to source deals, to hunt for deals and to underwrite. Right. Lana, she loves Excel. She is so great at it and so great at building, you know, building all these amazing worksheets. And I don't know what she does, but she does an amazing job with Excel. And so, you know, when Maggie met me, she was like, you know what, you would be a good fit for us because, you know, Lana's underwriting, Maggie does the deal sourcing, she builds a relationship with the brokers in our markets, and then I'm part of the investor relations, capital raising, part of the team. So we kind of magically just perfectly fit together.
You do, and all three of your personalities too, you're so complementary, because I know all three of you quite well. It's like you really are a powerful team, just because the synergies, the sum of the wholes is greater. It really works well for this age team. So yeah, you guys are blessed to work with. So what markets are you guys looking in right now? I mean, anything's tumultuous right now in the world, in the US, mm-hmm. in the real estate. What markets are you guys really kind of focused on right now?
So we have two investment properties that are in actually six altogether if you count the portfolio. But anyway, so we have six properties in Alabama, the southeast part of Alabama, which we really enjoy. That market has been amazing for us in our investments. Nice. Alabama is still one of our core focuses, even though it's not a sexy state like Texas and Florida. But
right.
Yeah, it has like sound market fundamentals that we like, and we're not competing, you know, with a lot of the other bigger syndicators out there and with institutional money. So then we're able to kind of buy these assets at a really good cost basis, right. Which is super important when you're investing because you make your money on the buy. And so Alabama is something that we like to continue focusing on, but we're also focusing on other part of the southeast part of the U.S. So Georgia, we're open to Georgia. We're looking in Tennessee as well. And parts of the Carolinas.
What specifically properties do you look for? What attributes are you guys looking at right now?
Oh, yes. So we are now focusing more of the newer multifamily class assets.
Okay.
So 1990s or newer, it's a vintage that we're looking for right now. And we're still looking for those bigger complexes for the economy of scale. So mm-hmm. anything that's 100 units and above. And of course, we're looking in markets or neighborhoods that are, well, good markets, obviously, with, you know, strong growth fundamentals, right? Job and right. Industry diversity and population growth, all that stuff. But also, you know, going down into the neighborhood level, we're looking for properties that are sitting in like B class, A class neighborhoods. So, yeah.
Excellent. So what's your process for like vetting deals? Like what are your... Yeah. What criteria are you guys looking for other than, you know, 100 units in those areas? Are you doing heavy value add, light value add?
Oh, yeah.
Where do you see, like, is it cash flow now or later? Kind of what type of criteria are you looking at?
That's a really good question. So we are staying away from the heavy value add asset, especially, okay. like you said, right, in this in this environment that we're in right now with higher interest rates and inflation mm-hmm. and, you know, just a lot of things going on, recessions. So we are really not looking at heavy value adds at the moment. And we probably would never go into heavy value adds. We kind of had some experiences with heavy value adds and we don't really necessarily like it. For us as auditors and, you know, with audit background, we're a little bit more risk averse. So we're going to look for the assets, you know, that have potential, the value add potential, because that's where you really make your money from the value add, right? So looking for those type of assets that are maybe like light value add, right? The light value add with the potential for us to bump the growth, the rent growth in the market. So yeah, nothing too crazy, something that's like manageable and something that's going to cash flow from day one, obviously.
Okay.
Yes. and then kind of for us to kind of work on the asset and continue building upon that, the cash flow by renovating the units, renovating the property, improving on the community and the tenant experience at our properties, and then boosting up the NOI and the valuation of the assets in that way.
Excellent. Excellent. That's really good. I think that's kind of the same market that we're kind of looking in as well, in terms of, you know, the mid level, not super, super heavy value add, but you want to have some component of that. Because I think that's where you bring a lot of value basically to your investors. I always say we're flipping an apartment, but it's a 6-year hold. And it takes you that long to renovate hundreds of units and things like
that. Right. And I think a good point that you bring up is the holding period too. Yes. It is kind of like flipping apartments, right? In the syndication space. And I think what we're interested in doing is looking for deals that have the potential for a longer term hold. Because, after being doing this for several years, there are times when deal flow is maybe a little bit slow and then investors are scrambling to find place to put their capital, right, after they exit out of a deal. And for us, as I believe as a real estate guy, they say, buy real estate and never sell.
Yes.
And so, that's kind of, I think what we are aiming to do, just buying real estate and then refinancing and return as much of the capital to the investors as possible as soon as we can, by infusing that value add business plan, right? And then refinancing, pulling out the capital, returning it to investors, giving them the returns, keeping a little bit none of their investment in the deal, if possible, right? And then continuing to cash flow, hold the property and continue to cash flow from there.
Yes, that's a good point. Because we've been able to turn, they call it full cycle, purchase it, renovate it, and sell it. Mm-hmm. We've been in 2 and 3 year hold periods, which is just phenomenal, the stuff we bought pre-COVID. But post-COVID, it's a different world. And that's the same thing. What are your views? What do you think the hold times are going to look like going forward based on the new economy and new deals? What are your thoughts?
That's a great question. I feel like the hold time, it's probably more realistic to the business plan, because we typically underwrite these projects to last 5, 6, 7 years, and like you said, the past year or two, we've been able to sell after only less than 2 years time frame for a lot of these deals, and beat the investor returns that was projected, right, because of the market. But now you're right, we're not in that kind of market anymore. And so I feel like it's going to be more realistic, 5, 6, 7, 8 years time frame.
Yeah. And it's interesting that investors, some investors based on their individuals, they're not really happy that we turned something in 24 months because they don't want it. Now I got to go find another deal. And a lot of them do reinvest with us in the next deal. But it's interesting that people would like to, I just want to put my money there, let it sit for 6 years or longer. That's an interesting perspective. And I think that people are probably seeing that more now than they did in the past, where things are going on in the world that I'd rather just have my money locked up in real estate than sitting in the bank or sitting in Wall Street. You see the same thing from your investors? What's the view of your investors that you're talking to nowadays? I know everybody's tightening the purse strings. What's the take? What's the word on the street, Jen, in terms of what's going on out there with the people you talk to, investors?
You're right. A lot of people are they kind of want to hold on to their cash at the moment. Mm-hmm. But when they do invest, they are looking for longer term strategies, I guess. They're not really looking to... it depends. We have all sorts of investors, and some people don't really want to tie up the money for that long. Right. But I feel like maybe they feel this way because there's different levels of experience, right, among all of our investors. Perhaps I think some of the newer investors do want to cash out a little bit sooner because they see that return as a sign, oh my gosh, this investment's working. They see the cash flow as a sign that the project is successful, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody has kind of like their different needs for the money. Some investors invested with us because he is investing for his kids' college. College expense, right? He's like, okay, so this investment will exit in 5 years. That's when his kid will go to school. So he wants to pull out that money and use it to pay for the college education. So yeah, all different spectrum of investors with different preference for either, for holding it or for pulling out as soon as they can, I suppose, as soon as they make their returns. So although our outlook is for more long-term holds, right? It's all gonna, I guess, depends on the deal that we're in and the environment that we're operating in. So So you know, we might still have opportunities where we would exit, you know, if possible, right, in the next few years, that we can exit early. But, you know, if we see the opportunity that we can cash out refinance and continue holding that property for a longer period of time, then we would like to take our investors along that journey with us.
And then they're trusting our money with us because they know we're going to make the good decision on that too.
Oh yeah.
So I know they sometimes get frustrated. Well, we exceeded our expectations and turned it quicker. It's not a bad thing, but you're right. It's everyone's at a different spot in their investment world. And that's why it's great that, you know, if they're educated, they know in advance, okay, we think this is going to go this period, this many years or whatever. And if you exceed it, you exceed it. But yeah, worst things have happened. You got your money back quicker. You know,
yeah,
we doubled your money faster than we planned.
Right. Yeah. I feel like they wouldn't really have, you know, that big of a problem if we're able to return all the original, you know, capital and then do an infinite return thereafter.
Yes.
Right. Like you get all your additional money back and then all these cash flows thereafter are cash free. And I mean, sorry, not cash free. They're infinite returns. Right.
Right.
So they're not really, they don't have any money left in the game, but they're continuing to get those cash flow from it. So I think in those situations, which is the ideal situation, I don't think investors really have too big of a problem.
As long as they can find something else to put it in right now.
Yes.
At this moment in time, there's not a ton of deal flow, if you will, because interest rates are up. Mm-hmm. Sellers are still thinking they can get top dollar for the properties. Well, that's really kind of not, you need to adjust what the economic conditions are. And the net operating income, all those things. But I think there's going to be a big adjustment going on in the next 3 to 6 months in terms of what the market looks like. But kind of in the same spot you are.
Yeah,
very good, very good.
We're gearing up to take advantage of those opportunities when they arise. So
it will happen. It will happen. Well, are you ready? Now it's time for the lightning round, Jen.
Okay, very exciting.
Prepared? Question number one, what was your nickname as a child?
So I'm Chinese and to be honest, I don't feel like I had a nickname when I was a child. In Chinese we have, it's very typical to have first and middle name and so everybody just called me by my middle name. I really didn't have a nickname that I can think of.
What's your middle name?
Oh, in Chinese, it's Xing.
Xing?
Xing.
That's cool.
X-I-N-G.
Excellent, excellent. Number two, morning person or night owl?
Well, I read this book, Miracle Mornings, and it converted me from being a night owl to a morning person. And it did so for the better because I felt like I got a lot more done. I was able to do a lot more, I guess, like self-development. And to spend more time in the morning filling up my own cup, right, before the kids wake up. So, you know, I'm more of a morning person these days than I was before, but naturally I am more of a night owl.
Oh, you are. I've read Hal Elrod's book. It's on my shelf there. I've read two of his books. It didn't take with me. I really tried. Throughout my life to try to be a morning person. So congrats, you were actually able to overcome that. That is a challenge.
Yeah, it's hard because you keep shifting back and forth a little bit. You know, sometimes you lose track and then right now I'm trying to get back into the morning routine again. So it's hard. Yeah.
When you have kids too, you have young kids. So yes, you've got to be up and ready to go in the morning. So
that
kind of forces you to do that. Well, that's good. Number three, what would be the first thing you do if you won the lottery?
Well, the first thing I would do, I always think about the future. And so knowing what I know now, I would definitely buy cash flowing and appreciating assets, more multifamily, because, you know, you gotta, you know, create that passive income streams if you don't live the lifestyle that you want, right? And you gotta protect that money and keep it growing so that you can pass it off to your future generations. So assuming that, you know, I have a lot of money from the lottery, I would probably take half to invest in multifamily and other cash flowing commercial real estate and protect the money in that way.
Excellent, outstanding. Number four, if you could live anywhere in the world, where would it be?
So I love Hawaii. I am naturally a I love the sunshine. I love warm weather. That's why I moved from Maryland to California, to LA for college, because I wanted to kind of get away from the cold for a bit and stay there for 4 years. So I'm naturally a warm weather person. I'm super happy when the sun is shining, and when I see palm trees, those are my favorite things. Sunshine and palm trees and the ocean. It's just so calming. So I think Hawaii has like all those attributes that I really am attracted to, and that I'm the most happiest in that environment. So probably Hawaii.
Oh, wow. You sound just like my wife. That's her. Absolutely. The sunshine, the
Yes.
water, the beach, all of that stuff. And I agree. I think that's wonderful. So good. And then the final five question, fifth question is, what's the one piece of advice you would give to new investors to help them get better returns?
Yeah, I think it's pretty simple. It's really just to diversify. To diversify
Yes.
across different asset classes, different market, different operators. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. That's kind of why Sage does what we do too. We source our own deals, but we also partner on other people's deals because we want to give our investor base opportunity to invest in different class assets, A, B, C, different vintages and in different markets, because we ourselves cannot be in Texas and Florida and everywhere all at once. So we have to focus on the markets that we want to focus on and that we know the most about, and then kind of rely on other operators that we trust to bring these other market exposures to our investors.
I think that's really, really wise. And I do the same thing. I partner with people in Florida on Florida deals and Texas, Texas deals, and Arizona, Arizona deals. So you give people an opportunity to pick the market they want. And we're working with people like you and I are friends, like you and somebody you know, like and trust that's going to do a good job of operating those assets. So I like that you're not limiting, that just because I'm buying in Kansas City, you can only invest in Kansas City. So I love that about you guys. The Sage team's great.
Thank
Well,
you so
thanks
much,
for being on
Matt.
the show. How can people get a hold of you, Jen?
Sure. Yeah, you can find us, all of us, in our contact information on our website, sageinvestinggroup.com. And we are on all the social media networks, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram. So Sage Investing Group.
Excellent. I follow you on all those too.
I
So
know
I
you
recommend everybody else does that as well.
Thank
Thanks
you so
so much
much.
for being on the show, Jen. You offered some really great golden nuggets of information here based on your experience and your background as a CPA and a savvy investor. So thanks again for sharing. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Matt, for having me on. Really appreciate it.
And that's a wrap. Thank you for listening to Better Returns, brought to you by Hansen Holdings. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a 5-star review because it helps others discover this valuable content. If you would like to earn truly hands-off passive income, go to hansenholdings.com, where we help you invest in large apartment complexes to grow your family's wealth. See you next week with another awesome episode. Have a great day.